Welcome to this week's Ortho Digest Rundown from May 25th, 2026. This week, we indexed 200 new orthopedic studies across 34 journals. The 75 highest impact studies are featured on the site, and we're covering the top 25 studies in this audio digest. As always, studies are ranked by our impact algorithm, which weighs journal tier and level of evidence. Let's start with our first study. Clement and colleagues published in the Journal of Arthroplasty, titled, Can Arthroplasty Stem Influence Outcome? Casino, a 7-year follow-up of a randomized controlled trial of stem length and cemented total hip arthroplasty. This multi-centered double-blind randomized controlled trial compared a 125mm short versus 150mm standard cemented polished taper slip stem in 220 total hip arthroplasty patients, assessing Oxford Hip Score, health-related quality of life, satisfaction, and radiographic survival through 7 years. Oxford Hip Score, Forgotten Joint Score, EQ5D Quality of Life Score, EQ Visual Analog Score, SF12, and satisfaction were equivalent at all time points. Survival was equivalent at 98.1% versus 98.2%. though the standard stem showed significantly greater subsidence at a mean of 0.7 millimeters, while the short stem produced medial cortical femoral hypertrophy in 3 patients. One limitation to note is that attrition to only 116 patients at 5-year follow-up compromises statistical power for detecting clinically meaningful differences in outcomes at midterm. Overall, at 7.3-year median follow-up, 125mm and 150mm cemented polished taper slip stems showed equivalent Oxford Hip Scores, with a mean difference of 0.5, and equivalent survival at 98.1% versus 98.2%. But the short stem demonstrated 0.7mm less subsidence. Moving on, Evans and colleagues published in the Journal of Shoulder and Elbow Surgery, titled, A Non-Opioid Multimodal Pain Protocol Achieves Equivalent Pain Control After Total Shoulder Arthroplasty, a Randomized Controlled Trial. This single-blinded randomized controlled trial compared a non-opioid multimodal postoperative protocol to a standard opioid protocol in 78 patients undergoing primary anatomic or reverse total shoulder arthroplasty without regional nerve block. At 10 days, visual analog score pain scores were equivalent at 2.4 versus 2.3, and PROMIS pain interference scores were equivalent at 61.5 versus 62.0. The non-opioid group consumed 89% fewer morphine milligram equivalents at 0.4 versus 3.7, with no difference in side effect profiles. One limitation to note is that follow-up limited to 10 days precludes assessment of opioid refill rates or whether the multimodal group sought opioids from outside providers. Overall, a non-opioid multimodal protocol achieved equivalent 10-day pain scores while reducing morphine milligram equivalent consumption by 89% compared to an opioid-based regimen after total shoulder arthroplasty. Moving on. Pasta and colleagues published in the Journal of Arthroplasty, titled, Tourniquet Use Increases Harm Without Benefit in Total Knee Arthroplasty, a Systematic Review and Meta-Analysis. This systematic review and meta-analysis of 51 randomized controlled trials examined whether tourniquet use during primary total knee arthroplasty affects deep vein thrombosis risk, blood loss, transfusion rate, pain, and range of motion. Tourniquet use significantly increased deep vein thrombosis risk, with a relative risk of 1.60, while calculated blood loss and transfusion risk showed no significant difference, with a relative risk of 1.05. Pain and range of motion showed no significant differences at any time point. One limitation to note is that moderate to high risk of bias in most outcomes with low to moderate grade evidence strength limits the certainty of conclusions. Overall, tourniquet use in primary total knee arthroplasty increases deep vein thrombosis risk by 60% without reducing calculated blood loss or transfusion requirements. Siege Koska and colleagues published in the British Journal of Sports Medicine, titled Effectiveness and Feasibility of Home-Based Physical Exercise Interventions for Children and Adolescents with Chronic Diseases, a Systematic Review and Meta-Analysis, This systematic review and meta-analysis evaluated home-based physical exercise interventions across children and adolescents with chronic diseases, predominantly cerebral palsy at 32.1%, cystic fibrosis at 12.3%, and idiopathic arthritis at 9.8%, pooling 19 randomized controlled trials for quantitative analysis. Home-based exercise produced a moderate effect on aerobic capacity compared to controls, but showed no significant advantage for functional capacity or quality of life. Functional capacity outcomes were equivalent when home-based was compared directly to center-based programs. Adherence exceeded 80% in 27 of 50 reporting studies, and adverse events were predominantly mild. One limitation to note is that heterogeneity across disease types, exercise modalities, and outcome measurement tools limits the clinical specificity of pooled effect sizes. Overall, home-based exercise improves aerobic capacity in children and adolescents with chronic diseases, but confers no significant benefit over controls for functional capacity or quality of life. Moving on, Naldovan and colleagues published in the Journal of Arthroplasty titled Clinical, Radiological, and Kinematic Impact of Gluteus Maximus Tendon Release During Total Hip Arthroplasty, a prospective randomized controlled trial. This randomized controlled trial randomized 144 total hip arthroplasty patients into three groups: tendon preserved, released, or released and repaired, to determine whether gluteus maximus tendon release causes gluteal dysfunction. CT measured muscle cross-sectional area and isokinetic extensor strength did not differ among groups at final follow-up. Only the release group demonstrated a statistically significant decline in muscle density, with no between-group differences in visual analog score, Harris Hip score, or Western Ontario and McMaster University's arthritis index. One limitation to note is that follow-up duration is not explicitly defined, precluding conclusions about whether the muscle density reduction is reversible or progresses to clinically meaningful atrophy over time. Overall, gluteus maximus tendon release during total hip arthroplasty reduces muscle density, but does not impair isokinetic extensor strength or clinical outcomes compared to preservation or release with repair at short-term follow-up. Moving on, Schroeder and colleagues published in the Journal of the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, titled Assessing Large Language Models for Clinical Coding in Hand Surgery. Effect of Note Authorship, Prompt Design, and Diagnosis Procedure Type. This study tested whether GPT 3.5, GPT 4.0, and Gemini could accurately assign ICD-10 and CPT codes from de-identified hand surgery clinic and operative notes across three procedure types using four prompt strategies. CPT accuracy was 91.5% across all large language models, while ICD-10 accuracy was only 23.9%, with incorrect or omitted laterality as the most frequent error. Prompt modification emphasizing laterality improved ICD-10 accuracy to 40%, but no large language model or prompt type achieved the hypothesized 80% ICD-10 accuracy threshold. One limitation to note is that only three procedure types were evaluated, so performance on complex reconstructive or fracture cases remains unknown. Overall, current public large language models achieved 91.5% accuracy for CPT coding, but only 23.9% for ICD-10 coding in hand surgery nets, with laterality errors as the dominant failure mode. Kibsgaard and colleagues published in the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery, titled Minimally Invasive Sacroiliac Joint Fusion Compared with Sham Operation, SIFSO Trial, a concise follow-up at 2 years of a previous report. The SIFSO trial compared minimally invasive sacroiliac joint fusion to sham surgery in patients with chronic sacroiliac joint pain confirmed by diagnostic criteria. Fusion patients demonstrated significantly greater visual analog score pain reduction and higher responder rates than sham controls at 2 years. Crossover from sham to fusion was permitted after the primary endpoint, complicating intent-to-treat interpretation at extended follow-up. One limitation to note is that sham arm crossover after the primary endpoint markedly depletes the control group, making 2-year between-group comparisons underpowered. Overall, At 2 years, minimally invasive sacroiliac joint fusion maintained superiority over sham surgery, with a mean visual analog score pain improvement of 41.5 versus 13.5 points, and 73% of fusion patients achieving 20-point or greater improvement versus 26% of sham patients. Moving on, Bergio and colleagues published in the Journal of Arthroplasty, titled Early Postoperative Gait Metrics After Superior Transverse Anatomic Reconstruction, STAR, versus Direct Anterior Total Hip Arthroplasty, a prospective comparative study. This prospective cohort study asked whether the piriformis-preserving STAR posterolateral approach achieves early gait recovery equivalent to direct anterior approach total hip arthroplasty. 47 patients underwent instrumented gait analysis preoperatively and at 6 weeks, with step length and single limb support symmetry ratios as primary outcomes. Between group differences were non-significant for step length symmetry and single limb support symmetry, with greater than 93.5% of patients in both groups achieving near normal symmetry thresholds. One limitation to note is that 6-week follow-up captures only the acute recovery window and cannot address whether piriformis preservation confers durable functional advantages. Overall, at 6 weeks post-total hip arthroplasty, the piriformis-preserving STAR approach achieved step-length symmetry ratio of 1.03 versus 1.02 for direct anterior approach, with greater than 96.8% of patients in both groups meeting symmetry thresholds. Moving on, Hasegawa and colleagues published in the Journal of Shoulder and Elbow Surgery. This multicenter study evaluated the diagnostic utility of synovial aspirate analysis and frozen sections in 425 consecutive revision shoulder arthroplasties using ICM definite periprosthetic joint infection criteria and 2 culture positivity thresholds. Synovial neutrophil percentage had the highest area under the curve at 0.707 to 0.714 for definite periprosthetic joint infection, with optimal cutoffs of 71.9 to 76.7%, while synovial cell count performed poorly. Frozen section showed moderate sensitivity for definite periprosthetic joint infection, but was insensitive for non-definite periprosthetic joint infection. One limitation to note is that the paper's title and introduction describe a superior capsule reconstruction donor site study, but the actual text reports a periprosthetic joint infection diagnostic study. This mismatch raises serious concern about manuscript integrity. Overall, in revision shoulder arthroplasty, synovial neutrophil percentage is the strongest preoperative diagnostic marker for periprosthetic joint infection, with an optimal cutoff of 71.9 to 76.7%, yielding an area under the curve of 0.707 to 0.714 for ICM definite periprosthetic joint infection. Shetty and colleagues published in the Journal of Arthroplasty, titled Task-Specific Electromyographic Changes in Gastrocnemius Medialis and Tibialis Anterior Muscles After Total Knee Arthroplasty. This prospective longitudinal study measured wireless EMG RMS amplitudes of gastrocnemius medialis and tibialis anterior in 77 severe knee osteoarthritis patients undergoing total knee arthroplasty versus 77 age and sex-matched controls across 5 time points. Pre-total knee arthroplasty, gastrocnemius medialis and tibialis anterior activation during gait was significantly reduced versus controls, while differences during knee extension and sit to stand were minimal. Post-total knee arthroplasty improvements were gradual and non-significant across tasks, with persistent gait deficits at 12 months and a strong association between gastrocnemius medialis activation and pain and functional outcomes. One limitation to note is that no rehabilitation protocol was standardized or reported, preventing any conclusion about whether targeted distal muscle training would alter these trajectories. Overall, gastrocnemius medialis and tibialis anterior activation during gait remain significantly below healthy controls at 12 months post-total knee arthroplasty, with higher gastrocnemius medialis activation strongly associated with reduced pain and improved function. Moving on, Bosgayak Bagdatli and colleagues published in the Journal of Arthroplasty, titled Functional Outcomes 5 to 20 Years After Total Hip Arthroplasty in Patients Under Age 40 Years, a comparative study with asymptomatic age-matched controls. This study compared functional performance, hip-specific outcomes, and health-related quality of life between 48 patients who underwent total hip arthroplasty before age 40 and 48 asymptomatic age-matched controls at 5 to 20 years postoperatively. Total hip arthroplasty patients performed significantly worse on timed up and go and 5x sit-to-stand functional tests and scored significantly lower on Harris Hip Score, Oxford Hip Score, and SF-12 physical component scores. Mental health scores were equivalent, but fear of prosthesis damage and reoperation was notably elevated in the total hip arthroplasty cohort. One limitation to note is that the absence of preoperative functional baseline data prevents determination of whether the observed deficits represent incomplete recovery versus pre-existing functional impairment. Overall, young total hip arthroplasty patients under age 40 at mean 10-year follow-up demonstrated significantly worse timed up and go, 5x sit-to-stand, Harris Hip Score, Oxford Hip Score, and SF-12 physical scores compared to asymptomatic age-matched controls, despite satisfactory pain relief. Moving on, Zia and colleagues published in the Journal of Arthroplasty, titled Latent Classes of Fear of Falling Trajectories and Associated Factors Among Older Patients After Total Knee Arthroplasty, a Prospective Longitudinal Study. This prospective longitudinal study characterized fear of falling trajectories in 270 older total knee arthroplasty patients using latent class growth modeling across four postoperative time points. Three trajectories emerged: high-level slow declining at 26.7%, low-level stable at 18.9%, and moderate-level increasing then decreasing at 54.4%. Multinomial logistic regression identified older age, lower positive psychology scores, lower distress disclosure scores, and higher visual analog score pain as independent predictors of the high burden trajectory. Early mobilization was not a significant predictor of trajectory membership. One limitation to note is that 3-month follow-up is insufficient to determine whether the high burden trajectory resolves or predicts long-term functional outcomes. Overall, latent class growth modeling identified three distinct fear of falling trajectories after total knee arthroplasty, with 26.7% of patients following a persistently high slow declining course predicted by older age, lower positive psychology scores, lower distress disclosure, and higher visual analog score pain. Moving on, Kanemori and colleagues published in the Journal of Arthroplasty, titled The Efficacy of Cefazolin Alternatives for Periprosthetic Joint Infection Prevention After Primary Total Hip and Knee Arthroplasty, a Systematic Review and Meta-Analysis. This systematic review and meta-analysis compared periprosthetic joint infection rates between cefazolin and non-cefazolin prophylaxis regimens across 18 studies in primary total hip arthroplasty and total knee arthroplasty patients. Cefazolin was associated with 45% lower periprosthetic joint infection risk versus vancomycin plus or minus clindamycin, and 34% lower risk versus all non-cephalosporin antibiotics. No significant difference in periprosthetic joint infection rates was identified between cefazolin and higher generation cephalosporins, suggesting cephalosporin class efficacy is comparable, but first generation remains superior to non-cephalosporin alternatives. One limitation to note is that high heterogeneity indicates that differences in patient selection, allergy status, and antibiotic timing across included studies likely confound the pooled risk estimates. Overall, cefazolin reduces periprosthetic joint infection risk by 45% versus vancomycin plus or minus clindamycin, and 34% versus non-cephalosporin antibiotics, with no significant difference against higher generation cephalosporins across 2,303,501 total joint arthroplasty patients. Moving on, Lam and colleagues published in the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery, titled Surgeons May Be Touched Out, the Ever-Increasing Workload of Telephone Calls and Electronic Messages in Total Joint Arthroplasty. This study quantified perioperative telephone and electronic message volume across 45,216 primary total hip arthroplasty and total knee arthroplasty patients at a single institution from 2016 to 2022. Postoperative touchpoints dominated, with patients averaging 4.4 calls and 2.8 electronic messages after surgery. Total perioperative touch points increased 105% for total knee arthroplasty and 121% for total hip arthroplasty over the study period, with commercial insurance independently associated with higher touch point volume versus Medicare. One limitation to note is that the study captures touch point volume, but not content, duration, or clinical complexity, making it impossible to determine what proportion represent preventable contacts. Perioperative touch points per total joint arthroplasty patient more than doubled from 2016 to 2022, reaching a mean of 17.8 for total knee arthroplasty and 16.1 for total hip arthroplasty by 2022. Moving on, Du and colleagues published in the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery, titled "Mild Lateral Femoral Condyle Cartilage Damage Does Not Affect the Outcomes of Medial Unicompartmental Knee Arthroplasty, a Mean 6-Year Follow-Up Study." This study asked whether outer bridge grade 2 or less lateral femoral condyle cartilage damage affects clinical outcomes or lateral compartment osteoarthritis progression after medial unicompartmental knee arthroplasty. Patients with overcorrected alignment or lateral meniscal extrusion were excluded, and outcomes included Oxford Knee Score, Forgotten Joint Score, Kujala Score, and Serial Kellgren-Lawrence grading. No significant between-group differences were found in any functional score, and 26.3% of knees with available radiographs showed a 1-grade Kellgren-Lawrence increase in the lateral compartment, regardless of baseline cartilage status. One limitation to note is that the cohort is 100% East Asian, limiting generalizability to Western populations with different body mass index profiles and knee morphology.
Overall, outer bridge grade 1 to 2 lateral femoral condyle cartilage damage does not affect Oxford Knee Score, Forgotten Joint Score, or Kujala Score at mean 70.8 months after medial unicompartmental knee arthroplasty, with 0% conversion to total knee arthroplasty across all groups. Moving on, Zhang and colleagues published in the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery, titled "Satisfied but Failed, Patient Satisfaction Compared with Total Knee Arthroplasty Success, Defined by the U.S. Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services." This multicenter cohort compared patient satisfaction at 1 year against CMS-defined total knee arthroplasty success in 8,444 primary unilateral total knee arthroplasty patients. Overall, 84% reported satisfaction, but only 64% met CMS success criteria. Among satisfied patients, 29% were classified as failures. Discordance was driven by baseline knee injury and osteoarthritis outcome score, junior revised score. Satisfied patients with a baseline score of 60 or greater met CMS success criteria only 39% of the time, versus 91% for those with a baseline score less than 40. One limitation to note is that the CMS 20-point threshold used as the comparator is a policy construct, not a validated minimally clinically important difference specific to total knee arthroplasty. Overall, among satisfied total knee arthroplasty patients with a baseline knee injury at osteoarthritis outcome score, junior revised score, of 60 or greater, CMS criteria deemed only 39% of surgeries successful, revealing profound discordance between patient satisfaction and a fixed 20-point improvement threshold. Moving on, Telang and colleagues published in the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery, titled "Postoperative Clopidogrel Thromboprophylaxis in Total Joint Arthroplasty: Increased Risk of Transfusion but Similar Venous Thromboembolic Risk Compared with Aspirin." This study compared 90-day bleeding and thromboembolic outcomes in total joint arthroplasty patients receiving clopidogrel versus aspirin monotherapy for venous thromboembolism prophylaxis using a national all-payer database from 2016 to 2021 with propensity score matching. Clopidogrel was associated with significantly higher rates of transfusion and acute anemia. No significant differences were found in deep vein thrombosis, pulmonary embolism, stroke, myocardial infarction, hematoma, or hemorrhage between groups. One limitation to note is that retrospective database design cannot distinguish patients continuing clopidogrel for mandatory cardiac indications from those using it solely for venous thromboembolism prophylaxis, potentially confounding the bleeding risk signal.
clopidogrel monotherapy for venous thromboembolism prophylaxis after total joint arthroplasty increases transfusion risk by 69% compared to aspirin without reducing deep vein thrombosis, pulmonary embolism, stroke, or myocardial infarction rates. Moving on, Rizk and colleagues published in the Journal of the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, titled Comparison of Costs and Postoperative Complications Between Carbon Fiber and Titanium Intramedullary Nails in the Treatment of Impending or Completed Pathologic Femoral Fractures, a propensity-matched study. This study asked whether carbon fiber intramedullary nails incur higher costs or complication rates compared to titanium intramedullary nails for impending or completed pathologic femoral fractures due to metastatic bone disease. Propensity-matched retrospective analysis of patients treated 2016 to 2023 compared inpatient and 30-day costs and 30-day outcomes. Mean length of stay was 8 days in both groups. 30-day readmission was 25% in both. Revision surgery rates were 1% versus 2%. No statistically significant differences were found in any cost or complication metric. One limitation to note is that follow-up is limited to 30 days, precluding assessment of implant survival and hardware failure in a population with variable but often extended survival.
Overall, carbon fiber and titanium intramedullary nails for pathologic femoral fractures show equivalent total inpatient and 30-day costs with comparable 30-day complication rates. Moving on, Daher and colleagues published in the Journal of Shoulder and Elbow Surgery titled Subscapularis Repair in Reverse Shoulder Arthroplasty, a Systematic Review and Meta-Analysis with a Sub-Analysis by Implant Lateralization and Repair Techniques. This meta-analysis compared outcomes of subscapularis repair versus non-repair in reverse total shoulder arthroplasty across 18 cohorts with sub-analyses by implant lateralization and repair technique. Repair reduced instability and improved pain and internal rotation overall, but in the lateralized subgroup, internal rotation improvement was equivalent between repair and non-repair groups. Transosseous repair yielded superior patient-reported outcome measures, while tendon-to-tendon repair produced better internal rotation improvement. One limitation to note is that the underlying studies are predominantly retrospective cohorts with inconsistent definitions of subscapularis repair integrity, making it impossible to determine whether functional repair drives the observed outcome differences. Overall, subscapularis repair reduces instability risk by 74% overall in reverse total shoulder arthroplasty, but this benefit is largely confined to medialized implants with no internal rotation improvement advantage demonstrated in lateralized designs. Moving on, Guam and colleagues published in the Journal of Arthroplasty titled Cup Cage and Custom Triflange Implants in Revision Total Hip Arthroplasty for Acetabular Bone Loss, a Systematic Review and Meta-Analysis. This meta-analysis compared cup cage versus custom triflange reconstruction for Paprasky 2-3B acetabular defects in Revision Total Hip Arthroplasty using 18 studies from 2015 to 2025. The cup cage cohort had significantly more Paprasky 3B defects, necessitating meta-regression adjustment for defect severity. After adjustment, no significant differences were identified in re-revision, periprosthetic joint infection, instability, or aseptic loosening between constructs. One limitation to note is that the underlying studies are predominantly retrospective with small cohorts, and pooling across heterogeneous implant designs and surgical techniques introduces unmeasured confounding. Overall, after meta-regression adjustment for defect severity, cup cage and custom triflange constructs show equivalent re-revision, periprosthetic joint infection, instability, and aseptic loosening rates across 808 revision total hip arthroplasties at mean follow-up of 5.8 to 6.2 years. Moving on, Ahmad and colleagues published in the Journal of Shoulder and Elbow Surgery titled Statin Therapy is Not Associated with Inferior Postoperative Outcomes After Arthroscopic Rotator Cuff Repair, a Systematic Review and Meta-Analysis. This systematic review and meta-analysis asked whether statin use affects structural healing, revision rates, and patient-reported outcomes after arthroscopic rotator cuff repair. Seven studies were pooled. Re-tear rates were equivalent between groups.
ASES score differences were non-significant, and revision surgery was modestly but significantly lower in statin users. One limitation to note is that the revision surgery benefit is driven by a single large administrative database study with inherent confounding by indication and comorbidity coding variability. Overall, statin use after arthroscopic rotator cuff repair was not associated with increased re-tear risk and was associated with a significantly lower revision surgery rate compared to non-users across 14,483 patients. Moving on. Baloniak and colleagues published in the Journal of Arthroplasty, titled Debridement, Antibiotics, and Implant Retention in Periprosthetic Joint Infection After Unicompartmental Knee Arthroplasty, a Systematic Review and Meta-Analysis. This systematic review and meta-analysis evaluated debridement, antibiotics, and implant retention outcomes for periprosthetic joint infection following unicompartmental knee arthroplasty using a random effects single-arm model across 9 studies. Pooled infection-free survival was 72% by proportion analysis and 62% by Kaplan-Meier pooling, with all-cause implant survival of 67%. Staphylococcus aureus accounted for 39% of organisms. Repeat debridement, antibiotics, and implant retention was required in 17%, and 34% ultimately required conversion to total knee arthroplasty. One limitation to note is that the total cohort of 165 patients across 9 studies is underpowered and methodologically heterogeneous, precluding subgroup analysis. Overall, debridement, antibiotics, and implant retention for periprosthetic joint infection after unicompartmental knee arthroplasty yields 72% infection-free survival and 67% all-cause implant survival, with a 34% conversion to total knee arthroplasty rate across 165 patients. Moving on, Liu and colleagues published in the Journal of Pediatric Orthopedics, titled Multicenter Retrospective Study of Ultrasound-Assisted Closed Reduction and Percutaneous Pinning versus Open Reduction for Pediatric Song Type V Lateral Condylar Humerus Fractures. This multicenter retrospective study compared ultrasound-assisted closed reduction and percutaneous pinning versus open reduction and internal fixation for Song Type V lateral condylar humerus fractures in 187 pediatric patients. Operative time was significantly shorter in the closed reduction and percutaneous pinning group at 37.07 versus 53.09 minutes, while Bowman angle, shaft condylar angle, lateral condylar overgrowth rates, and Flynn functional scores were equivalent at 12 months. Excellent and good outcomes were 98.96% with closed reduction and percutaneous pinning versus 97.80% with open reduction and internal fixation, with no statistically significant difference. One limitation to note is that the retrospective design without defined allocation criteria makes it impossible to exclude that closed reduction and percutaneous pinning was selectively applied to more favorably displaced fractures. Overall, ultrasound-assisted closed reduction and percutaneous pinning for Song Type V lateral condylar fractures achieved a 98.96% excellent and good rate versus 97.80% with open reduction and internal fixation, with operative time 16 minutes shorter, supporting equivalent outcomes with less surgical exposure. Moving on. Gusho and colleagues published in the Journal of Arthroplasty, titled Cemented Femoral Stem Design is Not Associated with Differences in All-Cause Revision or Specific Failure Modes After Total Hip Arthroplasty for Femoral Neck Fracture. This study asked whether taper slip versus composite beam cemented femoral stem design affects revision rates in patients 65 and older undergoing total hip arthroplasty for femoral neck fracture, using American Joint Replacement Registry data from 2012 to 2021. Cox proportional hazard models with competing risks of death found no statistically significant differences in all-cause revision, 90-day revision, or revision for any specific failure mode, including dislocation, fracture, aseptic loosening, or infection. Clinically notable trends toward higher early revision and dislocation with taper slip stems were underpowered to reach significance given the 17.2% taper slip representation in the cohort. One limitation to note is that taper slip stems represented only 17.2% of the cohort, leaving the study critically underpowered for low-frequency outcomes such as dislocation revision.
Overall, among 3,479 patients 65 and older undergoing cemented total hip arthroplasty for femoral neck fracture, taper slip and composite beam stems showed no statistically significant difference in all-cause revision at 1.8% versus 3.2%. And finally, Struble and colleagues published in the Journal of Shoulder and Elbow Surgery titled Associations of Preoperative Patient Mental Health Status, Sociodemographic and Clinical Characteristics with Baseline Pain, Function, and Satisfaction in Patients Undergoing Revision Rotator Cuff Repairs. This study examined which preoperative factors across 21 variables, including mental health, sociodemographic, and disease-specific characteristics, explain variation in baseline PEN shoulder score in patients undergoing revision rotator cuff repair of superior posterior tears. Multivariable modeling identified lower VR12 mental component score, female sex, and Medicare or Medicaid insurance as the top three predictors of worse baseline PEN shoulder score. Cofield large and massive tear classification and tear type were not associated with any PEN shoulder score subscore. Compared to primary rotator cuff repair patients, the revision cohort had lower mental health scores, higher rates of full thickness tears, large and massive tears, and glenohumeral cartilage changes. One limitation to note is that the absence of postoperative outcome data makes it impossible to determine whether the identified predictors of poor baseline patient-reported outcome measures also predict poor revision rotator cuff repair outcomes. Overall, in 305 revision rotator cuff repairs, preoperative mental health status was the strongest predictor of baseline pain, function, and satisfaction, while tear size and type showed no association with baseline patient-reported outcome measures. That wraps up this week's Ortho Digest Rundown. 25 studies reviewed. Head to ortho-digest.com for the full write-ups. Until next week, stay current.